for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. My name is Anna.
And I'm Sam.
Sam, are you ready to talk about Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 5?
I sure am. I'm excited to get to the end, but also, like, we really ramped up the action in this one.
I know. Ugh, there's so much to talk about. It's 8 a.m. I'm deeply caffeinated. Let's talk about it.
So to recap the plot of Kenobi, which is easy enough, Obi-Wan Kenobi, desert hermit, war hero, Jawa friend... has been called by his old pal Bail Organa because Princess Leia of Alderaan has been kidnapped by the Rogue Inquisitor Reva. Rogue Inquisitor Reva leads them on a merry chase around multiple different planets, most recently having captured Leia on the planet of Nur, where the Fortress Inquisitorius is. Obi-Wan and cool girl rebel hero Tala go in and rescue Leia. They leave in a violent shootout and...
Nur.
Oh my gosh. And then as they're flying away, Reva is about to get choked out by her boss because she promoted herself to Inquisitor in charge, Darth Vader. And Reva says, "I put a tracker on them." And Leia's little baby Lola lights up with Darth Lola eyes, and it turns out Lola is the tracker.
So for part five, we open up on a flashback to Anakin and Obi-Wan that had me smiling so big. It's right before Attack of the Clones. They're in a beautiful sunroom on Coruscant in the Jedi Temple. They're doing a practice sparring session, and it just... sent me over the moon. And then we cut to a scene immediately that had me not smiling so hard. Mm-hmm. The tracker that Reva put on Darth Lola is indeed working correctly. It traced Leia and Obi-Wan to the planet of Jabim, where there's a whole rebel cell waiting to get off planet. And Darth Vader is so pleased with Reva that she kneels in front of him and he makes her Grand Inquisitor. So this is just an exceptionally bad time for Vader and Reva to be speeding towards Jabim, because the rebel cell that Roken is leading is ready to get off of Jabim and head elsewhere to start their lives in safety somewhere else. They literally were just waiting for Obi-Wan and Leia to get there. Mm-hmm. So as they're preparing to leave, Vader is on his way to break some eggs. He has Darth Lola fly into a utility closet and seal the hangar door shut and lock the rebels inside of their hideout.
It's amazing what you can do with a tiny pizza cutter.
It is. And then Darth Vader fires up his tiny pizza cutter to send in some fighters and a whole crew of stormtroopers and Reva, and they begin firing on the external doors. Fortunately, Obi-Wan Kenobi picks this episode to re-inhabit his General Kenobi self. Mm-hmm. So he fires up the rebels. He's like, "Don't worry, we'll seal ourselves in. We'll get ready to leave. By the time they get inside, we'll be gone."
It's honestly not the greatest of speeches, because he's like, "If we fight them, we will die. But we don't have to fight them." They're like, "Come on, don't bury the lead there. All we have to do is survive long enough to get the hangar doors open, then we can escape."
Something is anything. I don't feel like Roken is a particularly charismatic leader. So yeah. Like, this is fine. Mm-hmm. Leia goes into the utility closet to undo what her traitor droid did. And Obi-Wan goes to the external door to stall for time, because they've got this heavy gun. They're blasting. And he ends up unlocking Reva's absolutely tragic backstory. She was a youngling during Order 66. Lord Vader came in when she was practicing with her lightsaber with all of her youngling friends. And he stabbed her. Mm-hmm. And she should have died and didn't. And hid among the cooling corpses of all of her friends until he left. And then, fueled by vengeance, has been currying favor with Vader ever since so she can get close enough to kill him.
Obi-Wan infers all of this from the fact that Reva knew who Darth Vader was.
Yeah, she knew he was Anakin Skywalker. So he says, you know, join me. We want the same thing. We can hunt Vader down together. And Reva rightfully points out, is that what you want?
Do you really want Anakin dead?
Obi-Wan cannot answer the question. And so she's like, deuces. She storms the rebel base. If this had been years ago, if Kenobi had been at his prime, I think the rebels would have been fine. As it is, there's a massive shootout in the entryway corridor to the rebel base. A lot of rebels die.
But not as many as could have, because while Obi-Wan is in the front, they do a fighting retreat back to the second location, which isn't behind a door, but is like a narrow hallway, which the stormtroopers can't get down. And Obi-Wan is blocking so many blaster shots, and he's killing so many stormtroopers. Like, a big, scary purge trooper comes up and is ready to beat him up, and Obi-Wan's just like, slice, slice, be gone. It's fun. It's scary.
It's fun and scary. It's not a Clone Wars fight where the Jedi are just superhuman, fluid, flexible superheroes. This is a real nitty-gritty Jedi versus stormtrooper fight.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan does well, but Tala and Ned B are the last two rebels forming the last line of defense. They're retreating. Ned B gets hit in the shoulder and starts to fail. Tala gets a blaster bolt to the stomach and is dying. And they press their foreheads together. And then Tala looks back at Obi-Wan and says, may the force be with you. Holds up a grenade.
A thermal detonator, yeah.
And hits go.
She shoots the door closed so Obi-Wan can't get to her. And then Reva, who's leading the charge here, is like, run away. There's a thermal detonator about to go off. And Tala shuts down the advance.
This is the point when Obi-Wan realizes he needs to outthink Anakin or this battle is already lost. So he gives Haja his lightsaber. He says, take care of Leia. And then Roken says, how exactly are you going to fight Darth Vader with no weapon? And Obi-Wan says, there are other ways to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks outside. He kneels in front of Reva. And he tells her that he has laid her a trap. He's going to bring Darth Vader here to Jabim, where Vader will be blinded and all he will be able to see is Kenobi, and then Reva can go in for the kill.
Mm-hmm.
So as Vader lands and strides into the hangar to get Kenobi
alone, because this plan works, Reva's like, we've got him locked in, and Darth Vader's like, I'll take him myself, and he strides in alone. And also, Obi-Wan has been led in by like two stormtroopers, and he's in handcuffs, but that doesn't last very long.
Leia gets the hangar doors open. Vader storms in. The transport is lifting off, and he grabs it with the force and drags it back down to the ground.
And then he starts ripping it apart with the force. Pieces are flying off every which way.
And then out of nowhere, a second transport takes off behind it. They bamboozled him. Reva uses this moment to strike. She comes up behind Vader. She fires up her lightsaber. She's about to sweep off his head. And then Vader just toys with her.
He fights her. He doesn't actually ever use his own lightsaber. He just blocks her lightsaber using the force.
He's like patty caking her with the force.
So the Inquisitors have those double-bladed lightsabers that spin on a ring. And she is trying to defend herself, so she's holding it in front of her. It's spinning. He uses the force. He stops it. He grabs it. He breaks it into two pieces, and he flings one to her so he can actually have a little bit of a fight.
He ends up with both lightsabers anyway. She's kneeling on the ground, and he runs her through just like he did when she was 10. And then from behind him appears the actual Grand Inquisitor, who is not dead.
Mm-hmm.
He is alive, and he takes back his Grand Inquisitor badge, and they say deuces, and they leave Reva to die.
However,
She does not die.
She does not die. She's been stabbed in the gut before. And in the ensuing chaos that is this episode, as they're running along, one of the things that Obi-Wan had given Haja, who also survived, is a communicator upon which Bail Organa had called in and been like, hey, haven't heard from you in a while. I know we're not supposed to have communications. If you can't get Leia, I'm going to Tatooine to rescue the boy. That communicator is lying in the sand, trod upon, but still working as the deeply but not quite mortally wounded Reva claws her way over to it and grabs the communicator.
And
reads the message.
Don't know what she's going to do with that highly classified information. Ta-da!
But there's one more thing. As the escape ship is flying away, it makes a weird bad noise, and Roken comes back and very quietly says to Obi-Wan, the hyperdrive is broken and they're right behind us.
Ta-da!
There we go.
Wow.
Once again, cliffhanger.
Wow. What do you want to talk about first?
Well, there are three things going on that don't make sense to talk about during a recap. This whole episode is overlain with the duel.
Yes. Okay. The practice duel on Coruscant is the spine of this episode. Every couple minutes, one of the vertebrae pops out and we get a structure to understand this conflict between Vader and Anakin.
So we start off and they're sparring, they're dueling, they're having a good time. Everything's working. And then right when the door is welded shut on Jabim and Reva shows up, we hit the scene where Anakin knocks Obi-Wan down and then knocks his lightsaber away and disarms him. And so Anakin is holding his lightsaber in the practice duel at Obi-Wan and says, your weapon is gone. You're defeated. And Obi-Wan says, hold up, not quite yet. And that is the moment he chooses to hand his weapons over to Haja because he's like...
In real time,
because he's like, I can still actually win this. And at that point, the duel changes into something where the next move he does, Obi-Wan and Anakin are fighting. Obi-Wan slides behind him, elbows him in the kidneys, and grabs his lightsaber and says, your aggressiveness, your need to have victory overwhelms you. You are blinded by your need for victory.
It's interesting because this episode shocked me with all of the different layers of emotionality and all of the different feelings that I ran through. And I think it's partially because we got this compressed Anakin Obi-Wan storyline, and it was all encapsulated in the practice duel. Like, we open on Anakin and Obi-Wan. Anakin still got his Padawan braid.
It's very funny because, like, they got in Hayden Christensen, Ian McGregor to do this, and it is 25 years later, and they had to, they're very made up, but
they're like, heavily de-aged by CGI.
That guy's not 19.
Yeah, the opening shot with Hayden, you're like, okay, this is a 40-year-old man. But then there's this light in the scene, like that clear pearlescent upper skyline Coruscant light, mm-hmm. and it just makes them glow and look so young and beautiful and strong. So past that one opening shot where I was like, okay, these guys are de-aged, I really just fell into this magical moment of feeling like we were back in the old days.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was smiling so big.
I was too. It's also a really cool fight scene because it has a few moments that are later looked at during the Revenge of the Fates duel.
Ooh.
When they're back to back, when they've like maneuvered each other, so they're pushing each other's like backs against each other, and then they have to come up with like a sword move that gets them around that. That directly happens in Revenge of the Sith,
ooh,
which is probably like within a month of this. Of this duel.
I believe the duel happened before Attack of the Clones. Because
really?
Anakin had both hands.
Oh.
And a blue lightsaber. So this is 3 years before the events of Revenge of the Sith. They have not fought a war together yet.
But they're still like brothers in arms.
Kind of. So what I loved about the practice duel is that it brought us back to a time that we got so little of, which was Padawan Anakin Master Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can actually tell that because they haven't fought a war together yet, they are less equal because Obi-Wan is still meeting out so many instructions, and he's still in that kind of like hierarchically superior position. He's lecturing Anakin and giving him feedback. And I guess it feels like this is a different relationship than we see them having gone through in the Clone Wars and at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, definitely. And it also shows that they're like really, really good lightsaber fighters.
Oh my gosh. When you go to the end of Attack of the Clones and Dooku just disarms them like it's nothing, we have seen how good they are in this practice duel. And it makes it even more shocking that Dooku disarms them both so fast.
Mm-hmm.
On the flippity flop, it makes Revenge of the Sith Anakin so much scarier.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because in the intervening, he has persecuted and won the Clone Wars. You know, he was a force unto himself in the Clone Wars. So, yeah, there's a lot of growth that Anakin had to have. And what's interesting is it seems almost like it's Vader who's having these flashbacks until the moment where Obi-Wan has to turn it around.
That actually makes such beautiful sense, because the way that the directors cut the practice duel into the episode, you begin to really think that Anakin has the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
We see Anakin disarm Obi-Wan. He's got his lightsaber. The duel appears to be over. And it actually is so beautiful to think that maybe that's where the memory ends for Vader.
Yeah.
He's like, I was always stronger and better than Obi-Wan. But Obi-Wan remembers the whole thing.
Which is that Anakin can be goaded into overextension and then defeated. But he's not going to remember the defeat, because Anakin's got one of those like personalities that doesn't just ruminate on your embarrassing failures. It ruminates on like your successes.
I wish I had that personality. That sounds nice. Deeply liberating.
But also sounds like that's what makes you a Sith. It's just like fail forward.
Well, yeah. And it shows that Anakin has not internalized the lesson.
What I got out of this was that, and perhaps it's because in my mind I had a different picture of when the duel was, but if the duel is indicative of the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, as it is meant to be, it seems, that Anakin, when he became Lord Vader and then Darth Vader, was still not a fully formed Jedi Master like Obi-Wan was. Mm-hmm. And that's like the gimmick, that's the meme joke of Revenge of the Sith, is like, how can you be on the council without the rank of master? He was never a Jedi Master.
Yeah, he was knighted, I think, right after Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, and then he's a Jedi Knight that entire time. He does very well, but the lessons he learned were merely ones of battle, and he didn't learn the full-on strategic import of knowing when to hold them and when to fold them.
Ooh.
And Obi-Wan did.
Ooh.
And Obi-Wan always knew that, and he knew that that was Anakin's failing, and I don't think Darth Vader ever actually was able to learn that lesson.
That seems to me like a beautiful commentary on how war stunts growth.
Mm.
And I don't know why I never thought of this when we were watching the Clone Wars, but Anakin is not able to learn the full breadth of knowledge that he needs to be a Jedi because he's so focused on not dying.
That's true. It is very difficult to learn or teach when you also have to do your full-time job.
Yeah, know? That too.
And that's what Anakin is up to. He's got his full-time job of being a general, and he's good at it, and it's a very full-time job.
And he's trying to teach his Padawan Ahsoka, right?
Yeah.
So you've got Obi-Wan and Anakin both as these overworked adjuncts, barely past TAs.
Not getting paid.
Not making no money and just completely overburdened. And their fight or flight is activated at all times. And they're also trying to teach and to learn at the same time. And you just cannot. It's too many things.
Whereas Obi-Wan was able to learn the lessons both from Qui-Gon and from years of instruction under the other Jedi Masters that he trained under, which is everyone except for Dooku.
That whole cursed lineage.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that up until the events in Tales of the Jedi, Dooku's like, I look forward to meeting Obi-Wan, and they don't actually meet until they meet in battle. So I found that interesting.
Where Dooku just aces Obi-Wan, which I'm going to say it again. It is shocking because Obi-Wan is doing quite well in this practice duel.
Yeah.
And that's before he had 3 years of constant practice.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, we get to see Obi-Wan not quite fully leveled up as a fighter in this episode, but in the duel and in the hallway scene, we see him pulling out the lightsaber. If it was just Obi-Wan fighting off wave after wave of Stormtrooper, I think he could have done it. I think the fact that he had other things to do, because he was the moral center of what the Rebels were up to, he had to do more. And in a way, that's ironic because, like, you can fight a battle or you can, like, win a war, but you can't do both at the same time because you only have two hands and one brain. And that's how Obi-Wan got forked in this episode, too. He had to go manage this withdrawal and do his sneaky plan of being all on flight 102 as opposed to 101.
I think Obi-Wan was playing chess with one hand and checkers with the other. Mm. The chess was outsmarting Vader and forming this, laying this trap. And then the checkers was like also blocking blaster bolts with his lightsaber hand. So that is deeply impressive. I also just thought it was nice that the practice duel is showing us this fully awake General Kenobi. Mm-hmm. And this is the episode in his series when he begins to wake up to that old self.
Yes.
I think the moment that he realizes that he's the one that has to rally the rebels is the moment that he allows himself to step back into being General Kenobi.
So one of the things that tapped my cryometer like a little bit up to like three is in this big underground hangar on Jabim. A whole bunch of people have moved through. There's a whole wall of like hidden path graffiti. And there's also a box full of lightsabers.
Oh, yeah.
And full of Jedi robes. And Obi-Wan picks up one of the lightsabers. And I don't doubt he recognized the lightsaber.
Whose do you think it was?
I have no idea. I didn't recognize it. But given how unique every Jedi's lightsaber is, he probably looked at that and he's like, oh, man, this was so-and-so's lightsaber. Did they travel the path? Did they die? What did they do? Did they give up their life? Is this their equivalent of burying the lightsaber in the sand? Is this a relic that someone carried for years? He has no idea. And in that moment, he gets together this group of refugees, and they're all so sad, and they're all so scared, and he gives his speech. Now, another moment when Obi-Wan gets his call from Bail, he takes it personal. He takes it in like a little corner.
Yeah.
And Tala walks in on him and she does her backstory drop, which is she was an Imperial officer and she was called to round up some families for questioning. They were force sensitive and the Inquisitors just massacred them. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't do anything about it. And so now she works to get them out and she shows that she has notches on her holster of ones that she's gotten out, and it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that the notches in her holster were for Force-sensitive people that she got out. I thought that was for killing Imperial officers, so that actually makes it way more moving.
Yeah, because saving lives is what she's all about now, and that's the burden she bears.
Well, and saving a life is so much more difficult than taking a life.
Yeah.
There's so much more that goes into living than dying.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I thought it was brief but beautiful backstory. Just in time for her imminent death.
Yeah. Once again, Star Wars killing its strong female characters.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about Tala?
Yeah, let's talk about Tala for a bit.
We alluded to this last episode because I was convinced that Tala was going to die in Fortress Inquisitorius.
Yeah.
And then she did not, and I was shocked. And then she did die in this episode, and I was still shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really felt like we were going to change this old Star Wars paradigm of killing off powerful female Star Wars characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did not change the paradigm.
It's a bummer, honestly. We had had a few other interesting named characters in the Rebellion who were doing cool stuff. I'm reminded of, ironically, the Saw Gerrera and Steela Gerrera arc, mm-hmm. where you have the three, let's call them siblings. You have the soft boy, Lux Bonteri. You have the hard boy, Saw Gerrera. And you have the middle path girl, Steela Gerrera.
Medium girl.
And she's the one who dies, and the movement fractures and ends up with Saw Gerrera taking over and making it highly radical. And I think that, at the very least, disregarding the gender of that situation, it's at least interesting from a storytelling perspective to have your leader die and your movement shift as a result of it. But Tala was always a, like, side operative. She occupied a very interesting spot in Roken's Rebel Cell, the Hidden Path org chart of she was a mole. She was a operator. She was part of these things, and she had access to a ton of information, acted as a spy. She was like the outside consultant who no one ever gets to talk to and no one knows what they're up to. They just show up to work in a suit every day and make big decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been interesting to swap like Roken and her.
Where Roken's the mole and she's the rebel leader?
No, where Roken's the one who dies.
Oh.
And she becomes the rebel leader, because then it would have been like, now it's more organized. But it seems like Roken is one who is peaceful, and they wanted to keep up peace for a little bit longer.
Yeah. I can see why you're thinking about the Steela Gerrera, Saw Gerrera dynamic, because Steela Gerrera from Clone Wars Season 5 was a highly effective leader and is actually voted the leader of their insurgency on Onderon, and then dies. And then arguably Saw Gerrera's force becomes much less effective. And it would have been interesting if Tala and Roken had swapped places, because I think Tala would have been the natural leader of this rebel cell, and it might have operated more effectively. So I guess I just wonder if Star Wars gives us powerful female characters and kills them off for the emotional impact. Because if Roken had died, he has not done much to endear himself to us.
Yeah, it wouldn't have given the same emotional impact. Part of it is that right when Tala shows up and tells Obi-Wan her story, it seems like she's trying to get him into the fight fully. She's like, I'm all in. You need to be all in. Like, I need General Kenobi. And that's a very valid point for her to make. I feel like she kind of made it in the previous episode. Roken wouldn't have been as impactful as a character to have die off. But if you're going to kill someone in this scene, you could have created someone else in the space. You could have had Haja die, and that would have been interesting.
I think Ned B dying was a noble enough sacrifice for
me. Ned B dying was very sad, because he gets shot like 100 times because he's like an 8-foot tall steel monstrosity. And he's like, you have to hit me in like very specific spots. And they do. And then he kneels down and is protecting Tala as he's getting shot to pieces. But Tala can't get up, and she can't escape.
So I want to talk about something, because I think I've finally hit my limit with the powerful female deaths in Star Wars thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to talk about fridging. So for those who don't know about this, fridging is a concept. I think it was popularized by a Green Lantern comic book.
Okay.
His girlfriend is killed and stuffed in a refrigerator.
Gnarly.
To catalyze him into action. And there's no other reason for her to die other than to push him into action. So fridging has become a term, an umbrella term. It's broadened in scope. Now it refers to killing off a female character for no other reason than to further a male character's storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really quite popular. You can see it all over the Marvel universe,
yeah,
which is just the highest profile examples that I can think of.
You also see it in even Star Trek, like Next Generation, when Tasha Yar dies, that makes Data a more interesting character. Uh-huh. And we've seen it dozens of times in the Star Wars universe.
We have, and I haven't brought it up yet because I haven't been upset enough. I think there was an opportunity to talk about fridging when Padme dies in Revenge of the Sith, but I had such complicated feelings about Padme's life and death that what we said in the Revenge of the Sith episode is just let Padme rest.
Yeah.
She's dealt with enough.
Mm-hmm.
Tala still had a lot of life left to lead. And so there's fridging on one hand, and then on the other hand, there is the death of a female character that really serves to finish her arc
mm-hmm.
in a way that is satisfying and respectful. I think about maybe Black Widow sacrificing herself in Avengers Endgame. She does it because she wants to finally wipe her slate clean and feel like she's balanced out all of the wrongs that she did. So she chooses to sacrifice herself for the fulfillment of her character arc.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt pretty satisfying. It's still sad, but it's satisfying. So I want to talk through this with Tala. Was she fridged to further Obi-Wan's storyline, or was her death the fulfillment of her arc? Or something in between.
Or something orthogonal. So, very eloquently put, what came to mind for me is when Captain Tarpels, the Gungan.
Uh-huh, in Shadow Warrior, season 4 of the Clone Wars.
Is it in Shadow Warrior? Where he captures, yeah, Shadow Warrior, where he captures Grievous.
Uh-huh.
Grievous stabs him through with his own spear in a kid's show and says, "What does it feel like to die?" And Tarpel says, "Not die. Sacrifice."
Ooh, I just got goosebumps all over. I loved that episode.
And then the Gungans capture General Grievous, which no one else was capable of. And this idea of sacrifice, of like, it's not that my arc has ended, it's that I'm choosing this moment to expend my entire cartridge load.
Mm.
Like to spend it all. And Tala has always had it all on the line. We see that in the previous episode. And as she comes up to Kenobi and shows off, I've rescued like 16 Force-sensitive kids. I've carried them through this path. Her cover's blown. She can't keep doing that. She needs to do something else. And is she a hero of the rebellion or is she a martyr of the rebellion?
Hmm.
And which one would serve the cause better in this moment? Because out of all the people there, it's her and Obi-Wan. Like, if you take away, like, the fighting force of the rebels on Jabim at 100% is everyone minus Leia. The fighting force at 99% is Tala and Obi-Wan.
Yeah, and Ned B.
Because Ned B gets a lot of kills, too. There's a great scene where a stormtrooper is, like, trying to charge past Ned B, and he's like, no, and he slams him into the ceiling and then throws him at another stormtrooper.
Just Wookiee style.
But I think the transition for her from infiltrator, mole, saboteur, spy to warrior meant that she needs to be willing to sacrifice herself. And before that, it was like, what am I willing to burn? But I think she was always, always willing to know, like, she always had a thermal detonator in her pocket.
She has been 100%ing this entire endeavor. And before we got her backstory, we had been asking, or at least I had been asking, what's in it for Tala? Why is she so willing to sacrifice herself at any turn, at every turn? So I guess it makes sense for what we know of her so far. It's just, I'm at the point where this is no longer sitting right with me.
Now, here's what offers a little bit of catharsis for me.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan sees her die, goes back, completes the mission, and the person who is transformed by Tala's death the most is Leia.
Really? Why do you say that?
Because Leia says, "Where's Tala?" And Obi-Wan says, "She didn't make it." I think that is a deeply radicalizing moment for Leia.
Oh.
That people who she has spent time with, who she admires the hell out of, because like all the women in her life are like, put on these fancy clothes, do your hair right, don't play in the mud. And Tala's like wear your blaster cross side so that you can draw it faster.
Uh-huh.
And Leia's like, I want to be like her.
Oh.
And then Obi-Wan says, Tala didn't make it. She died so the rest of us could survive. And Leia's like, I want to play with everything on the line.
Wow.
We're like both tearing up right now, but we should take five.
We're gonna take a minute. I'm sorry. I got to stop crying first.
All right, we're back. Eyes are dried.
Okay, we have wiped the tears. We took a couple minutes. Okay, so if I haven't met grown-up Leia,
mm-hmm.
I presume she will be important. But if it's true that Tala's death leads Leia into growing up to become the woman that she's supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
then actually this might be a radical inversion of fridging, where the death of a female character furthers the storyline of another female character. And that is actually really interesting.
I think for two reasons it might be. And so this is all like our...
Yeah, this is the meta. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the growing up Skywalker canon. But Tala's sacrifice, turning her death into a sacrifice, because like... Satine was just killed in front of
that
Obi-Wan.
Was actual fridging.
That was actual fridging. Tala takes the initiative. She could have sat there and kept fighting and probably gotten shot heroically as Obi-Wan fought his way to her to rescue her. She chose that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that somewhat degenders the situation a little bit, I think, in that she is a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
She is choosing to be a warrior mm-hmm. in this moment. I think that's valid. And then as someone who has gotten to see grown-up Leia, Leia gains from this moment and many others, she moves from being a soft girl to a middle path girl, I think, where she, and we very much see it a little bit later, she will absolutely put it all on the line. She 100% will lie to your face. She'll confabulate so that she can get away to shoot you. That is who Leia turns into, and that is Tala.
Wow.
Yeah. So for this brief moment that they had together, Tala had an amazing impression on who Leia is going to be when Leia chooses to be a rebel.
It makes it so much more palatable to me. And maybe that's not great, but there is such a long history of women sacrificing themselves for men, for love, for whatever. And somehow it feels better for a woman to sacrifice herself for another woman, for a mother to sacrifice herself for a child, for a mother figure to sacrifice herself for a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I don't want women to have to do that, but if they have to, if Tala has to, she feels that she has to, it feels better that she's doing it to shape someone like Leia, who has potential to be powerful
mm-hmm.
and impactful and really make a difference.
And that's Tala's reason for being. That is who she wishes to be. She rescues these Force-sensitive kids because in her calculus, saving a Force-sensitive child's life is more important than her own.
Wow.
And the fact that she's like, gonna put another notch on her belt as she's dying. She's like, thermal detonator, one more notch. She probably knows that Leia's Force sensitive before anyone else does because she's like, I got one. 17 to 1. That's a good kill-death ratio. Speaking of powerful women, I think it's time to transition to the dark horse in the scene, Reva.
Absolutely.
So Reva has her own flashback sequence going on throughout this entire arc, which is, hey, do you know that thing where the more you watch it, the worse it gets? Order 66 is happening. She's living it. And she is one of the younglings at the very beginning of Kenobi.
She was a beautiful, perfect 10-year-old in her dumb bucket hat doing lightsaber training with Tara Sanube.
Yeah.
And Anakin comes in, and for some reason, this hit so much harder than watching it in Revenge of the Sith.
Because you're a child in this one.
Because you're a child, and the way the camera is angled, it's angled up at Anakin's face, hidden by the cowl, lit by the lightsaber, and somehow it feels more up close and personal than it ever did, because I think the camera is tighter on Anakin in the scene.
It is, because it's always been that, like, the clones betrayed the Jedi, and the only Jedi who was leading a force of clones to the Jedi Temple was Anakin. So every other Padawan who the Inquisitors have hunted over the last 10 years has been like, yep, our clones turned on us. It was bad news. Reva is like, they were led by Anakin flippin' Skywalker, who then all of a sudden becomes Darth Vader. Like, same fighting style. I've seen him in the gym. Like, I know that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker.
And she says, and this is so heartbreaking, she's leaning up against the door to talk to Obi-Wan, and her voice drops, and it's almost, you can barely hear it. And she says, we thought he was there to save us.
Yes. And then she's yelling at Obi-Wan because she says, he was your Padawan. Where were you when he killed my friends, my
family?
Why
didn't you save us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan is gut shot by that because he's like, look, I was busy. I was killing General Grievous, like all these things, but yeah.
So all of a sudden, you understand what Reva's been up to the whole series. Mm-hmm. It's not just that she's trying to get close to Vader to kill Vader. It also feels like she has been trying to get Kenobi for revenge against Kenobi, too.
Yes. And Kenobi is able to just kind of muddy the water enough so that he's like, hey, so this plan doesn't actually require any buy-in from any of us. You let me go beat up these stormtroopers and send Darth Vader in after me. Either I injure him or weaken him enough that you can kill him, or he kills me and you get a promotion. Win-win for you, dodgy for me, but like we can actually both get out of this what we want. And she's like, okay.
And it's fascinating because what he basically asks her to do is choose. He says, choose revenge on Vader or revenge on me.
Yeah.
And it makes us realize as a viewer that her hatred of Vader is deeper. She is putting the blame on Vader for doing the action more than on Kenobi for failing Anakin.
Which is fair.
Which is fair, but it's also really interesting. However, what it feels to me is that Obi-Wan pressed on her sore spot. He says, there's women and children and families in this hangar. Are you going to let Vader come in and do it again?
Mm-hmm.
He manipulates Reva. She loses. And then he leaves her to die.
So that's also her action, right? Because Vader does his thing. He grabs Flight 101 out of Jabim, out of the sky, parks it illegally, rips it to pieces, and then is like, oh, there's no one inside, as Flight 102 takes off with all the good guys.
Amazing.
And then Reva chooses to take that moment to go after him. And she thinks she's got it, and she does not. And also, it is revealed, because as soon as she ignites her lightsaber and then gets slammed into a wall, Vader's like, he was wise to use you against me. So she got close. She just got exposed too early or was just never able to play that game. And it turns out she was never able to play that game because the Grand Inquisitor's death was a ruse. Vader was playing a different game and he always knew she was the youngling. He always knew she was alive.
Yeah. It's so hard because when we get these flashbacks of Reva as a 10-year-old, it makes me think of her as still a youngling.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of this episode, we just talked about how Anakin's growth was stunted because of war.
Yeah.
So how was Reva's growth stunted by being a deeply traumatized 10-year-old who's now scraping her way up the ranks of the Inquisitors? That also doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah, it's it's dark and she is left to die.
It's dark and it's unfair.
Yeah, well, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. You know, she could have done differently than being an inquisitor. She could have joined the path. At any time, she could have been like, hey, I'm turning in my red lightsaber. Like, she could have joined with Kenobi before this. She let herself be blinded by the prospect of victory, just as Anakin did.
I guess if Star Wars has any thoughts on revenge, it's that revenge is corrosive.
That's so true. There's like a 3,000-year-old saying that revenge is drinking poison to make someone else die. And that's so, it's such a parable of the human condition that revenge is not going to get you what you want or need, because now you've devoted the intervening years between beginning to take revenge and exacting your revenge to devoted to the other person. The best revenge is a life lived well. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think Obi-Wan got better revenge on Anakin by being a fish farmer in the middle of the Dune Sea, getting hassled by Jawas for not buying enough soap.
Maybe. He was also punishing himself. So that's not a life well lived.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So the episode leaves it very unclear what Reva's going to do with her new classified information. She could go crawling back to Vader and mm-hmm. present it to him and try to scrape her way back up to the bottom rung of the Inquisitors. She could try to intercept Obi-Wan and Leia.
Mm-hmm.
For what? I don't know. She could go to Tatooine and track down Luke.
Mm-hmm.
For what? I don't know. It's deeply unclear what she's going to do with this.
I wonder how much she actually knows. Right? She knows more than all the other Inquisitors. The only other person who knows, that I think there's three other people who know, besides Obi-Wan and Reva, that Anakin and Darth Vader are the same person. It's Palpatine, Thrawn, and Tarkin.
So I haven't met Thrawn yet.
No.
Okay.
Tarkin probably knows because he's not dumb.
Uh-huh.
And he knew Anakin very well before the war, and he knows Darth Vader very well after the war.
Uh-huh.
And Thrawn is just Tarkin, but smarter. So we're left with this secret information. Does Reva have more information? Has she inferred that Luke and Leia are Anakin's kids?
So that's what's not clear on the tape. But what she does get is the name Owen. And we know she knows Owen because she interrogates him in the pilot.
Yep.
And she knows Tatooine because she was just there 3 days ago.
Yep, and she knows that Obi-Wan was probably there because she just got a message from Bail Organa, and now she knows that Leia, the kid she captured, was part of a different plan, and if Bail Organa, who is, you know, possibly partially involved, he's like of the left wing of the parliament,
yeah.
So he's probably a radical terrorist. And then Obi-Wan, if they've been in communication this whole time about a different child, maybe there's a connection between those kids.
Right. She has enough information to know that there is Leia and then there is a boy that Bail is equally concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
So that is enough to infer a fair bit.
Yeah. Because she's proven herself to be pretty smart.
So now she's going to, I think, be faced with a similar question to what she got this episode. Vader or Kenobi?
Yeah.
Revenge or something else?
So that's her plot, what that she's going to follow through with. Now we have two bad guys going in different directions and one good guy going nowhere because the rest of the good guys are on a ship with a failed hyperdrive.
Yikes. How hard is it to fix a hyperdrive?
If you'll recall the events of Phantom Menace, it can get very crazy.
Oh, no.
It depends on a lot of things.
Depends on how accommodating the Toydarian shopkeeper is when you come in asking for new hyperdrive parts.
It depends on if Kenobi Episode 6 involves Leia pod racing.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine? Oh, that would have been such a fun, like, I feel like the fan base would have just erupted into, like, just a combination head explosion orgasm. It would have been very funny.
What's wild is that Leia is the same age that Anakin was when he was pod racing, and she is a small child, and Anakin was an equally small child. But she's got his mechanical bend.
She does. She is able to fix the door once and also...
And Darth Lola.
She does redeem Darth Lola back to the light. Darth Lola is now Droid Master Lola.
She L3s that restraining bolt and I yelled.
And Lola's little eye turns blue and she's like, chirpity, chirp, chirp, chirp.
Much better. I yelled. Gosh, the emotions of this episode. Weeping as Obi-Wan is holding off the blaster bolts from the rebels. Weeping when Tala dies. When Vader lifted the transport back down to the ground, I kid you not, my jaw dropped to the floor. I just sat there like you could have fit a tennis ball in my mouth because that is how shocked and astonished and appalled I was.
And then when it lands, the bulkheads start flying off as he rips it apart. Like, this scene gets very scary. And he rips apart enough of it that he can see through it.
It's like he's just tearing off chunks of tofu with his hands.
Yeah.
Like, just butter.
That's a very great scene because it shows the violence of the dark side of the Force. Mm-hmm. You know, he's pulling it and tearing it. If there had been people inside, they would have been torn to pieces.
Well, and also, like, the raw force of what he's doing seems so brutal and uncontrolled. And then as soon as he's dueling Reva 30 seconds later, it's so precise.
Oh, yeah.
Powerful and precise and scalpel-like. It was the most impressive display of Vader's power I've ever seen.
I agree hugely. Watching Vader, that's like full Vader mode.
Yeah.
A dark side Force user who's proven herself to be quite powerful. She can defeat just about anyone else, shows up, and he's like, oh, okay, we're fighting now? Are we fighting? Is this a fight? New high score. What does that mean? Like, he does not... He's toying with her the entire time.
Just the fact that he can do the hammer and the scalpel with equal power and precision is outrageous.
And that's why he's Darth Vader. Darth Vader is the Emperor's fist. Darth Vader is the one who goes out and when a situation needs the correct amount of military precision, you bring like an actual general. When it requires, we need to make an example, when we need to put the fear of the Force into the Hutt cartel, into the Black Sun, into like some bad situation, send Vader, you send him alone and he'll be fine. Vader does with one Star Destroyer what takes Tarkin a fleet.
It's like what Reva says, you have no idea what I've done alone.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So it turns out this whole time that Reva was playing a different game. She wants to, she's playing her own separate game. She's using the whole pretense of the Empire to get close enough to attempt to assassinate Darth Vader.
But now she's just like Tala. Her cover is blown.
Yep.
There's no going back to where she came from.
Yep.
Where she was a double agent, it gives it this whole new resonance from the Fortress Inquisitorius episode part 4, where she strides after Tala and says, traitor, you're a double agent.
Oh.
And Reva is the traitor.
She is.
Oh, nothing gives you rage like projecting hard on someone else about your own story. Man.
Ooh.
Wow. Well, we've talked about some powerful characters this episode.
Yeah.
Is it time to choose your fan fave?
It's time for the Darth Lola hour.
Okay. It's time for Darth Watch. It's time for Baywatch.
Anna, who is your bae for this episode?
Well, I'm glad we just talked for an hour because I was in between two characters and you actually helped me decide who to pick. So I was going to pick Reva because I was amazed at her resilience and her single-mindedness over these many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that she had a heartbreaking story, and I was amazed at what she was trying to do. But because I was able to get a new perspective on Tala, I am hands down picking Tala.
Great choice.
Who did you pick?
Not Tala.
Not Tala? Did you pick Vader?
No.
Okay. Did you pick Kenobi?
Yes.
Yay! This is the first time Kenobi's getting Baywatch on his own show.
So that's, for me, that's part of it. He has a high kill count, also part of it. He booms him. He just bamboozles. He gaslights, gatekeeps, girl bosses his way into Reva's head, into Anakin's head. He's like, how long do you, Roken, how long do you need to open the door? He's like, at least 3 hours. And Obi-Wan's like, you have one. I have other things to deal with. See me after class. Like, I am General Flippin' Kenobi. I'm back, baby. He gives a speech which starts off not strong. And then, like, at the end, people are like, yeah, we aren't fighters. We don't have to fight. We don't want to fight. We just have to survive. We've survived this whole time. We're ready to do this.
He correctly assesses the forces that mm-hmm. he has and determines what they will be best at. And it's not fighting.
It's not fighting. And then when Tala dies, sacrifices, he doesn't let it, he's like, okay, this sucks. Like, I could have saved her. We could have had a different resolution. She's a valuable asset. I am capable of finishing the mission. This is not going to break me. I am not Anakin, and I'm not going to let the death of a woman who I care about break me.
Yeah, he uses his teaching to walk that fine line of compassion and non-attachment, where he doesn't let the death of someone he cares about derail him. And that is powerful.
It really is. And every, like, We had a Chekhov's armory in this episode of, like, what tools are at Obi-Wan's disposal? He's got lightsabers and blasters and Tala and ships.
And Ned B.
And Ned B.
Who's a battering ram all on his own.
And Leia and Roken and a bunch of nameless rebels. And he's like, that's not enough. I'm going to acquire more. Hey, Reva, what are you up to? Like, I know you're trying to kill me, but are you, like, really trying to kill me?
I need a second battering ram.
Yeah, from behind. And that is what happens. And so he is able to outthink the problem because he knows that if he faces this on Vader's terms, he will lose. He can't help but lose because Vader has him completely outgunned and outmanned and everything. He's like, well, okay, then we won't use guns. We won't use men. We won't use fighting to lose a fight. We'll bring a bribe to a gunfight. You know, like that's his move. And it worked.
I didn't pick Kenobi for Baywatch, even though he was eminently deserving, because I still feel icky about him using Reva.
Yeah.
But I'm holding out hope that maybe in the final episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi, I will be able to vote for the title character. That would be cool and hip and funky fresh. I would love that.
And Tala definitely deserves a nod for reasons. I mean, she's gotten, what, 5 nods in this series?
She's been in 3 episodes and gotten 5 votes. So she's up. She's in, like, the top 15 of Baywatch.
So that is Tala's style. She shows up, gets an insane kill death ratio, and then bounces. And that's like, that is heroism all on its own.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need people who show up and do heroic actions and then are recognized posthumously.
Yeah. She's one of my favorite Star Wars heroes. She is an inspiration to me and to Leia and hopefully to us all.
I have this idea that there is a squadron named after her in Legends. And it's probably is a backdating thing, but I think there's a fighter squadron that's like Tala Squadron.
Wow.
Yeah.
That me.
I gotta track them down.
I'm Tala Squadron.
I think they're flying Z-95s, so it's like meh, but still,
whatever. That's sick. I love it.
It's old school, yeah.
I love it.
So Join us next week for the thrilling conclusion of Kenobi, a TV series.
Wow, part 6. Will we be able to add a second vote to Obi-Wan Kenobi for Baywatch in his own show? Tune in and see. I'm crossing my fingers. It would be nice.
It would be nice. As always, you can find us on social media on Twitter. If you haven't seen too many things on Twitter, because now you're limited to seeing 600 things a month on Twitter.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. Mastodon, Instagram, Facebook. You can follow us on Patreon, where we put on, we've been doing more leftovers than 2D Clone Wars lately, but we're going to get back on that.
Yeah, we've had a lot of extra things to talk about from the Obi-Wan Kenobi series that don't fit into the episode. This Thursday, we talked about the Revenge of the Sith novelization and how it makes the Anakin, Obi-Wan, Vader, Obi-Wan dynamic more tragic and delicious. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. So join us on the Patreon. New this year, just the $3 membership will get you all of the access to our bonus content from the last 2 years and everything that we're releasing moving forward.
And send this episode to someone who really needs a pick-me-up because they've gotten forcibly laid off from their job. The person they were hired to replace replaces them. They get stabbed in the gut by their big boss and are lying there with one piece of information, one broken lightsaber, no insignia, and are ready to take on the galaxy.
Wow, Reva had a really bad afternoon.
Yeah, she committed to the bit.
Well, pray for Reva. We'll see you next Tuesday.